On this podcast, you'll find interviews with high-performing, successful individuals in life sciences. On a weekly basis, we cover their proven methods, principles, strategies, and mindsets to implement new technologies that scale to meet the needs of people in our world.
Welcome to this episode of Life Science Success. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Don, and I'm a consultant and digital marketer in life sciences. And before we get started here, I have a quick message from our sponsor.
This episode of Life Science Success is brought to you by D3 Digital Media Marketing. Dive into the digital world with confidence and creativity on your side. D3 Digital Media Marketing is your all-in-one solution for making a lasting impact online. From the vibrant, engaging world of social media marketing, podcasts and webinars, to the strategic depths of website development, SEO, pay-per-click, email, and content marketing, we tailor our approach to fit your unique brand story. Let's elevate your presence, connect with your audience, and drive success together. Your digital journey starts here. Visit d3digitalmedia.com to learn more.
Today we're joined on the Life Science Success podcast by Leonard Mazur. He's the CEO and co-founder of Citius Pharmaceuticals with over 50 years of experience in the biopharmaceutical industry. And I'm excited for this conversation as well with Leonard. So welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So as we get started here, would you just, start by sharing a little bit about your background and what led you to the field of biopharmaceuticals?
That's a great question. So I can honestly state that I did not spend my years in college or high school dreaming that I was going to be part of this industry. Okay. So, my background is I came here as an immigrant with my parents. I came from Germany, but my parents were from Ukraine. And so, ultimately, we wound up in Philadelphia. So I've always said the two best things that ever happened to me: one, I came here as an immigrant; two, I grew up in a row house neighborhood. So that that helps an awful lot in terms of shaping what your life is all about and how you kind of look at things. So the reality of it is this: when I finished undergraduate school I went to Temple University, got an undergrad degree there, and ultimately also got an MBA from there. I used to engage in reading through the want ads when they had them in newspapers. Yeah. And they would have row upon row of jobs. So, I was a liberal arts graduate. I was a psych major as an undergrad. So, and liberal arts, students always want to know, how is it that you suddenly get into something like pharmaceuticals or biopharmaceuticals? And it was really pretty simple in the sense that I call it the random walk of life. All right. Mm-hmm. And we all have a random walk at various points in time. And especially at that time, if you're a liberal arts graduate and you didn't really have any kind of an objective for yourself in terms of a career, you relied upon things like the want ads. So the want ads, basically, as I looked through them, I saw ads that said pharmaceutical sales, company car and expenses.
And that's all they had to say was those two things. It would be nice. Yeah,
that's it. That led me to that. And ultimately, I get hired by a company that I was fortunate in a sense that company that hired me, it was the right company for me at that time in terms of what was going on. So, and it was called Cooper Laboratories. And Cooper was a high growth, basically entrepreneurial company founded by a gentleman by the name of Parker G. Montgomery. And he was a Boston, Harvard undergrad, Harvard Law School, and worked in a State Department as an assistant to the Secretary of State. Then he started the company. And he was one of the very first ones that took venture capital money in those days to get the company off the ground. So The company made 150 acquisitions. You can imagine that that pace. And so what happened was, as a result of all that activity, I got rapidly promoted from pharmaceutical sales to marketing, and then ultimately in the company, I transitioned into strategic planning, acquisitions, and ultimately running one of the company's business units. So Cooper, what we did is ultimately is the company created medical specialty silos. That makes sense. And I basically worked on the very first one that was done that way. It was in ophthalmology, and we called it Cooper Vision. So, and it became one of the world's largest eye care companies. We started with a small acquisition, and ultimately the business grew. And I worked on the first couple of transactions. It got spun off from the rest of Cooper very successfully. So today it's part of the Cooper companies headquartered on the West Coast. I also had the opportunity, I formed Cooper Dermatology, which had Aveeno of all products as a cornerstone brand when it was just a small little brand being promoted to a dermatologist of all people. So the company was incredible. It's an incredible place to be. And they also along the way picked up in Cooper Dental, I didn't have anything to do with it, but I always like to cite it. They picked up a small toothbrush company doing less than $1 million in revenue. The name of that toothbrush was Oral-B. Became the world's largest selling toothbrush. So just to give you an idea. So that's how I ultimately, and what it is, once I got into the industry, even in pharmaceutical sales, I loved the industry. I liked everything about it. I read everything I could about it, and it was it's a great industry to be in. So for lots of different reasons for different people, but I enjoyed it wholeheartedly, and I think that again, you've got to have a passion and you've got to have a desire for what you're doing, and you've got to feel it. So, and that's been something that I've always had inside of me.
Yeah, the one reason why I like asking this question is that I don't feel like this industry is very welcoming to somebody that doesn't have experience, right? So whenever you're brand new and you want to get into this industry, the first sort of question is, you know, what experience do you have and what knowledge do you already have before you're, you know, running in the door? And I feel like, these stories are relatively common, right? Where there's somebody that just seems to find their way, but at the same time, it's always interesting to hear. And certainly, I mean, with your history with Cooper Vision, I mean, you had to have hit many different milestones in your career. It'd be interesting to hear, like, out of your 50 plus years, you know, what sort of most significant, what are the most significant milestones that you feel like you've hit in your career, and how have they helped you along to get to where you are today?
Yeah, I think being part of Cooper was a real important milestone. And, I look back on it, and there were a couple different milestones along the way when I was at the company. And the very first one that took place was when I was in pharmaceutical sales. So, you know, the process was that every 2 months, your manager would come out and work with you, right, for 2 days. And in between the 2 days, he would take you to a real nice restaurant for a dinner, and just to get to know you. Nice. And so I was probably in the field for about 6 months when he said to me, he turned to me and he goes, have you given any thought to your career and what it is you'd like to be doing? You know, and I said, as a matter of fact, I have given it a lot of thought. First thing I want to tell you is I don't want your job. I don't mean you as your job, but I don't want to be in sales management. I'd rather be in marketing. And I think that's where I can use my my talents the best. So, and that got me into a marketing position, because marketing positions, transitioning from sales to marketing is really, really hard. It's not, it wasn't easy then, and it's not easy today. It's the same story. So, but I made a point of it. It got recognized. He ran it up the ladder somewhere. And then at one point, the way the company worked it is they gave me a special assignment project, which I executed on. And then they invited me back to when they had an opening for a market research analyst. Mm-hmm. And that's how I managed to break into that. So that was a key milestone in terms of all of a sudden making that known. And again, my advice to anybody starting out, or even if they're not starting out, they should really try to identify where it is that they want to go to. You know, what's that journey that you want to take? So to me, that was important. That was really, really important, an important milestone. So, and you know, I had others along the way, believe me, we all have them. So.
Yeah, I saw a great sort of message today on LinkedIn. Somebody was talking about, you know, how much they've learned not only from their successes but also from their failures overall, and that, you know, that they really have used those to catapult their career forward, right? And in some people's cases, maybe they're more subtle, maybe they're things that aren't as obvious. But this whole idea of like it's going from, you know, pharmaceutical sales where you were to now CEO and actually, you know, co-founder of Citius Pharmaceuticals couldn't have been an easy journey for you. How did that transition come about, and what sort of made you, what made you want to start Citius Pharmaceuticals?
Well, it's like this, I should go back and, you know, before that happened, I became an entrepreneur at the age of 50, which is the worst possible age to do this. I can state that clearly, because I had this itch. I always call it the entrepreneurial itch, and I had to scratch it. And so that desire was in me, and probably the reason for it was because the companies where I worked, the most of them. So Cooper Labs, run by Parker Montgomery, entrepreneur. After that, I went to BASF. I didn't have that. That was a bureaucratic experience. That taught me a lot there about what I didn't want after a while. So, right. And then I was at ICN Pharmaceuticals, run by Milan Ponish, founder, entrepreneur. Ultimately, I joined Medicis Pharmaceuticals, dermatological company, run totally, completely by an entrepreneur. So I had these various entrepreneurs to compare to, and sometimes I would sit there and think, you know, I think I can do better than they're doing. So that kind of led me to that, but it was difficult. Starting out was extremely, extremely difficult, if not almost impossible. I formed a dermatological company with nothing. I had nothing. I had no drugs. I had nothing. Zero. It was just me. And so when you start like that, you realize something. Number one, you're the only one in this, and you're the only one that cares. Nobody's going to care whether you fail or succeed. Nobody. Okay. So you got to bring it about yourself. And that's difficult. That's a very difficult proposition to do. I had no venture capital backing. I had none of that. So I'm in a different kind of a place as an entrepreneur because of that start. You know, that I remember I had some of these sayings I used to say to myself, like, number one, failure is not an option. Okay. Number two, if you're not taking a risk, then you're taking up too much space, all right? So you have, but ultimately, due to relationships that I had developed along the way, it helped me get my very first company off the ground. Ultimately, I got funding for it. Ultimately, I got products in. I created products. I did an acquisition that ultimately got me really going. And then so that really enabled me. But I can tell you this, I would bring papers for my wife to sign at home, signing over the house. And I did that several times. So, you know, risk taking is an important part of being an entrepreneur. You know, and I kind of look at the world this way. There are risk takers and there are risk averters. I was in the risk taking category. And I recognize that about myself. And I also know that that's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. That category is probably a rare category for the most part, especially at the age of 50.
Yeah, like him or not, I sort of love one of the quotes that Elon Musk has made as well about entrepreneurship, and I sort of can at times hear the same exact thing sort of playing through in my head as well, that, you know, a bit of entrepreneurship is, you know, that want to make the world a better place. However, the other side of it is you have to be willing to, I think his quote is, you have to be willing to eat glass or chew glass while you're looking into the abyss. And, yeah. You know, at times I could hear that in your story. I mean, if you're looking at signing over your house, this idea of ultimate risk-taking, you know, for sure was at play, you know, in your life. So could you just take a moment and tell us a little bit more about Citius Pharmaceuticals? What do you do at the company? What are some of your main products? What are your mission and the main areas of healthcare that you're focusing on?
Sure. So basically, our company, Citius Pharmaceuticals, it's actually 10 years old. It got started in 2014. Myself and Myron Holubiak, who used to be the president of Roche Labs here in the U.S., I'd known Myron for decades. He and I met actually when we were both started out in pharmaceutical sales. He was in Pittsburgh. I was in Philadelphia. We both got, I didn't know him. We both got promoted just about the same time into marketing research. And we wound up at an IMS training seminar. And I remember looking down, seeing the list of the participants, and I saw his name. And I said to myself, he's got to be of Ukrainian descent. and it turned out that he was. And so there were a lot of coincidences there. And we struck up a friendship and stayed in touch with each other over the years. And so we always wanted to do something together. So we get together. We decide that we're going to start the company finding a product that we could develop. Now, up until that point in time, my experience in being an entrepreneur was completely 100% in revenue-driven products, drugs. So I acquired them, repurposed them, sold them, bought them back again. I mean, all kinds of transactions. And all of a sudden now, what we decided to really start the company on was a drug that was under development. This drug was invented by the chief of infectious disease at MD Anderson.
Okay.
And it was an antibiotic lock solution for salvaging or sterilizing infected central venous catheters. So we took a good look at that. We personally funded ourselves the phase 2B work, put the money up, and I should highlight this for you, that what separates us from every other entrepreneur in this business is the fact that we have our own money in the company. So I've invested personally $22.5 million and Myron has invested $4 million. That's a lot of money to put at risk. And we've gone side by side with investors as they've come in. So we licensed this drug, which was an antibiotic lock solution containing minocycline, sodium EDTA, and alcohol. And what it is long-term central venous catheters get implanted mostly in a lot of cancer patients, and they're a lifeline. They're a lifeline for them because they can carry chemo, nutrients, therapeutics, everything. But a certain percentage of those catheters can get infected. And when they get infected, that is a serious issue. So what Dr. Rad wanted to achieve with the drug that he invented is he had to invent something and make it so that it would not compromise the integrity of the regular IV treatment. So this solution had to be able to go in there, do its job, and leave plenty of time for the IV treatment to be active. So what he invented and came up with was something that Minilock is a product that a nurse can inject into the catheter, lock it hemodynamically, so it only stays in the catheter and the line. And for those of the people on the line that don't know this, but those catheter lines, they're implanted surgically, usually by the collarbone subclavically, and they get threaded to the superior vena cava of the heart. And that's how everything gets delivered. So if they get infected, today the only standard of care is that they're surgically removed and put into another site where it's a very painful, two separate surgical procedures. The use of that, putting that second site in, can be very painful for the patients, and it's something that no one likes, but there's no other option. So with the solution that Dr. Rad came up with, we can, that solution stays in the catheter in a line for 2 hours. At the end of 2 hours, the nurse comes in, aspirates out the contents, flushes the line, and the treatment resumes for 22 hours. You put this solution in for 5 to 7 days in a row, and at the end of that time frame, the line is completely sterilized and free of everything, including biofilm, which is bacterial slime that forms on the inner walls of the catheter. So that's our that became our first drug. And what we did ultimately is we merged a company in with a public company called Sidious, and we picked up one drug in that they had. They had a hemorrhoid drug that we kept, and just very quickly, that hemorrhoid drug was there because there was an opportunity in the market. Believe it or not, in the 21st century, there isn't a single FDA-approved hemorrhoid drug on the market. So, but you have the over-the-counter market that has preparation H and all that, but they're only good for grade one hemorrhoids. They're not good for grades 2, 3, and 4, the more serious types of hemorrhoids. So we thought we could work with that, but not take it to the market, but ultimately monetize it for our shareholders by taking it up to a certain point and then out-licensing it or divesting it to a larger partner. So that was our second drug. And then we have a third drug that we acquired, actually, that had some history to it. And it was for a very rare cancer called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. It only affects 3,000 people. We acquired this. It's a drug that Eisai Pharmaceuticals had approved, had it on the market. There's the story behind it is it went like this very quickly. This drug was originally developed by Ligand. Ligand ultimately divested it to Eisai. Eisai got it approved. It was approved with a condition that they reformulate the drug at some point. The FDA wanted them to remove unfolded proteins. So, Eisai had this on the market for 3 years. They got pressure to do the formulation. They had a shutdown of a manufacturing facility. They decided to pull the drug off the market while they did the reformulation work. They did that. They went back to the FDA after they completed it. The FDA said to them, "Sorry, you have a new drug here. You got to redo a phase 3 with everything that goes with it." So Eisai went ahead and started doing all that work. That was 2014, just to give you an idea of the timeline. So, and ultimately, they out-licensed it also to Dr. Reddy's of India. Dr. Reddy's was expanding their business here in the U.S. on the branded side. They were active in that world for a couple of years. Then they decide they're getting out of that world. Oh, so, wow. So there was a divestiture program, and we got contacted by an investment bank, and we put the funds up for that. And that the reason we did is because they were on their very last patient, and so as a result, we were able to file a BLA in September of 22. We got a complete response letter, which was a little bit of a setback, but it had to deal with a validation procedure that wasn't yet completed. We completed everything. We now have a PDUFA date from the agency of August 13th of this year. And our plan is to launch that drug and begin producing revenue, something that I'm more comfortable with. So so basically, you know, my activities are not only shepherding or making sure that all that is in progress, but what's really important also for a company like us is you have to have relationships.
Yes.
And so those relations, and they're both internal and external. And those external relationships are critical to the success of any smaller company. You just can't make it on your own. So you realize that you've got to have bankers and investment banks that you got to deal with. Number one, your shareholders are really important. Number two, so you got to pay attention to, there's managing both the external side of the company and the internal side, both. So you just can't become an expert in one and drop the other, because it doesn't work that way. All right.
Yeah, it's a tough balance, I would imagine, in your role. It's probably not an easy balance, because you have to sort of think long-term about the strategic impact, but you're also, relationships are here and now, right? I mean, that's the much more of the, things that I would imagine that you have to continually work on, even throughout time.
Correct. That's true. So, and that's always been, one of my trademarks has always been to maintain positive relationships all the way throughout with everybody that you can. It's going to be a success to your business.
Yeah. Throughout your leadership journey, what's the most valuable piece of leadership advice that you've ever received?
That's a good question. So I think it's kind of, this is really, it's there's some interesting ones. Let's put it this way. So again, the person that I really admired that I had the greatest level of respect for was the CEO of that very first company, Parker Montgomery. And I managed to stay in touch with him over the years. And so he always had good advice for me. So some of it was really interesting, because I'll give you an example. I remember one time I had really achieved a great deal of financial success on something, on a transaction. And I was talking to him about it, and he just said to me, "I'm going to tell you what my father told me years ago." And I said, "What's that, Parker?" He said, "My father said to me, only a fool makes a fortune twice." And then Parker says, "I have to confess to you that I didn't follow my father's advice."
Yeah.
And neither did I, but that was an interesting piece of advice that he gave me at that point. So I thought I would I think it's something that everybody should pay attention to, but follow your own heart when it comes to anything like that. So I think a lot of things you learn by example, but the example that's being set by the leadership above you is always important. And I was fortunate that there were various points along the way that I had some great examples that I could follow and learn from, actually, because let's face it, I did not have an MBA when I came into this business. I knew nothing about anything. I was a psych major. I didn't take a single business course in undergraduate school. So when I went for the MBA, I took it in finance, because I figured I would get the marketing on the job. And I didn't know anything about accounting, finance, or anything. So, and that also, again, I had to learn from others along the way. So, I had some really great teachers.
That's good to hear. What inspires you?
I think I have a drive for success that's probably sometimes it may be excessive, But that's what inspired. You know, I want to make sure that we succeed. That what we have basically is something that number one, that the patients will benefit from, because that does inspire me. What inspires me is that that's the one thing about this industry that you can't get anywhere else, and that is you're doing good for people, a lot of good. And you know, one of the best examples of that is when I was at ICN Pharmaceuticals, we received an FDA approval for a drug for RSV. Mm. Now, that's in the news today. Right. Back then, respiratory syncytial virus, as it's called, was only known to affect infants, and usually infants in a neonatal intensive care unit, and they would die because there was nothing for them. So the very first drug that got approved for that was ribavirin, as it was called, for respiratory syncytial virus. And what happened was we received, after that drug got launched, we received numerous phone calls, letters from parents, from doctors, and from nurses thanking us for the fact that we had made this drug available, and that drug had just saved an infant's life. I have to say, that was probably the most gratifying moments that I had in my entire career. And I remember saying it to the marketing team at one point. I said, cherish these days, because you want for something like this to come around again twice is a rarity. But it was great. It was just a great feeling overall. And it made me recognize how fortunate I was to be in this industry.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just to focus in on the sickest of all of us, right? The whole story around, you know, central lines and people that are essentially, you know, that their port is not, you know, one that's working for them, and unfortunately going right. to have to be put in again is not doesn't sound like a pleasant thing to have happen right. either. And I completely agree with you. I mean, so many times the sickest of us can be such an inspiration for those of us who are not there at that point as well. What concerns you?
I think you always worry about the the environment in terms of not. I don't mean actually the physical environment that everybody's concerned about, but it's the environment that you're operating in. So from a business perspective, it bothers me when I see that the pharmaceutical industry gets criticized, and I think it's not fair. I don't think it's the right thing. I think this industry has single-handedly extended people's lifespans over the decades. We're all living longer because of the fact that we have a plethora of drugs that will save our lives, extend our lives, reduce high blood pressure, all kinds of things. So, and yet it doesn't get the recognition that it should. And the fact of the matter is that we are the drug developer for the world. And we should accept that as a fact. It's if we bring in socialized medicine into the United States at some point, I'm afraid drug discovery will disappear.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that, right? I mean, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. And I also think that the complexities in our supply chain oftentimes are not clearly understood by everybody that's involved either. And our supply chain has been made purposely more complex, and I feel like everybody, you know, just to take an aside here for a second, I feel like everybody along the way sort of wants a dollar in their pocket for a pharmaceutical. And then the minute that everything, you know, sort of blows up and everybody wants to criticize the pharmaceutical industry, those same individuals are standing there, even though they're putting dollars in their pocket, are standing there criticizing. And I don't think that's fair. I work in this industry. I'm, you know, wholeheartedly somebody who feels a bit passionate about the criticism that we continually take as well. And I don't think it's all, I think if you saw everybody that got a dollar along the way from a lobbyist or whatever, and then those same individuals are sitting there criticizing pharmaceuticals, I don't think that's exactly right. Fair.
Correct.
What excites you?
lots of different things. All right. But again, I think, again, success excites me. All right.
Yeah, for sure.
But, more than anything else, probably not more than anything else, but I think look, there's the personal side of life, which there are lots of factors in there that excite me in terms of children, grandchildren, and so forth, my wife, etc. So the family is really important to me. So, but I'm probably different than I was way back earlier in my career when I would work 100 hours a week. And you know, I realized that you know, my family made a sacrifice in that process.
Yeah. Yeah, I can completely sympathize with that as well. Well, Leonard Mazur, thank you so much for being on the Life Science Success Podcast. Thank you for telling us about your products and your company. And it was so great to get to hear about Citius Pharmaceuticals and everything that you're doing. I really appreciate you being here.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to Life Science Success. For complete details about this podcast, including show notes, how to get in touch with guests, and more episodes, please visit www.lifesciencesuccess.com. If there's someone you'd like for us to invite to the show as a guest, please let me know by sending me a message at the podcast website. Please click subscribe on your favorite podcast app, share the podcast, or tell a friend about it, and last but not least, rate the podcast. Thank you again.